like to start by introducing someone who has become very dear to our heart, Mark Daly. Mark Daly.
Education at the McGill University Health Center. He is the first director of education at the McGill University Health Center. He joined the MUHC after completing a training program as a registered respiratory therapist. He's worked in the Department of Anesthesia for a large number of years. I won't tell you how many. And he's held the position of Assistant Chief Anesthesia Technologist for over 10 years. He clearly knows all about breathing. Okay. During the past years, he's held the position of the MUHC Patient Safety Officer, and I think some of you know him in that capacity. He holds a bachelor's degree from Concordia, a master's degree in education from McGill, and he also holds an appointment with us at the School of Nursing. He really knows the field of patient safety, I have to tell you. He's been down at the executive development program offered by the Institutes for Health Improvement in Massachusetts, and he also works with the Ministry in Quebec as facilitator for their human factors and patient safety training programs. So I'm not going to say more. There is more, but I'm not going to add the rest. I'd like Mark to come up and have a wonderful conference.
Thank you. All right, I have to get the technology organized. Can you hear me in the back? Just raise your hands if you can hear me. Yes? Perfect. Good morning, everyone. We have a full day, as you've been told already. I'm going to try not to stand behind the podium because that makes me a little anxious, so I'm going to do as much walking around in this space as I possibly can. So the title of our presentation today is Transforming Nurse-Physician Communication and Maximizing Patient Safety. When we think about transforming something, that often means that we're going to need to initiate some type of a change. To initiate a change, we sometimes need some triggers or stimuli to be able to help us engage the people that we're working with to make that change a possibility. So what I'm going to do over the next 20 minutes is share with you some of those triggers to hopefully give you some thoughts on how you can encourage the people that you're working with and your teams, your colleagues, and your staff to implement some changes to improve the way we're communicating nurses, physicians, RTs, because I'm an RT, I have to put that in there, and other professionals that may be a part of that particular team. It works. I have no declaration of disclosure. I have nothing to disclose today, so I'm going to move on from this slide. So let's start with a basic definition. So definition of communication that I want you to think about during the course of the day today is that it's an exchange of information. It's an exchange of information among different people and using a variety of methods to be able to do that. So we have conversations face-to-face, we write emails, we text message a lot these days, sometimes when we're driving, which isn't so safe. We have a variety of ways to be able to do that. So really focusing on that exchange of information and the ways that we can actually do that. So the first trigger that we're going to talk about are stories. So just raise your hands in the audience if you've ever been involved in, witnessed, or heard about a story where communication had a negative impact on patient safety. Just raise your hands. It's hard to see with the lights, but I'd say almost everyone's raising their hand at the moment. So clearly within this room, there are, how many people are here? 350. So there probably are between 300 and 350 stories in this room already. So think about those stories. There's two other stories that I want to share with you. So the first story is a story that's told by a woman of the name Sorrel King. Can we play the video quickly? Thank you.
My daughter Josie died a year and a half ago at Johns Hopkins due to medical errors. Last week, I had the opportunity to speak at Grand Rounds to the doctors, nurses, and leadership of the hospital. I spoke about what happened to Josie and about the Josie King patient safety program that is being launched.
So Sorrel King goes on in that video to describe her experience with her daughter Josie, who you see on the screen right now, who was 18 months old at the time. And she describes what happened with Josie while she was in the hospital, that there was a verbal order for no narcotics to be given. The mother attempted to express that to the staff, and yet the staff gave the narcotics to Josie. And Sorrel King then says, Josie's heart stopped as I was rubbing her feet. Her eyes were fixed, and I screamed for help. Josie was 18 months old when she died. The second story that I want to share with you is a story that's told by Martin Bromley. Martin Bromley is an airline pilot, and he had to make a very difficult decision for his wife, Elaine, when he had to withdraw life support from her. In 2005, his wife, Elaine, was admitted to the hospital for routine sinus surgery, and as a result of some difficulties trying to intubate her, ended up in the ICU, having Martin Bromley have to make that difficult decision about withdrawing life support. And he very articulately describes the situation that was recounted to them when they did the investigation of what happened to his wife, that the team was very experienced. They had a lot of years of knowledge at the head of the table. But they became very focused on one particular thing, which was trying to put a tube down her throat, as opposed to looking at the bigger picture of trying to establish an airway, perhaps using some other methods, such as a tracheotomy. They describe again that when they interviewed the nurses said very clearly that they knew what was happening. From their vantage point, they could see what was going on, and they knew what the next steps needed to be. And they actually left the operating room theater, went out, got an emergency tracheotomy kit, brought it into the room, and announced to a room where you have people, high adrenaline, it's a crisis. They walked into the room and said, "We have the emergency tracheotomy kit." And yet no one in the room heard them. And the staff at that time did not have the ability or the tools to be able to speak up to a different level to get the attention of the people that were actually trying to intubate Elaine. Martin describes the environment in the operating room as a problem of leadership, situational awareness, prioritization, decision-making, communication, and of assertiveness. And the key of all of those, the assertiveness, communication, and teamwork, the interrelation of those were one of the key things that unfortunately resulted in Elaine eventually passing away. She was 37 years old when she passed away. So we think about the stories that you had in your mind when you all raised your hand, the two stories that I've shared with you. There's some other triggers we can use. So the other trigger is some studies, some data that we can use to support the fact that we know communication can get in the way of the healthcare that we're providing to our patients. So there's three studies that I'm quickly going to mention. So the first was in 1999, the Institute of Medicine published a study that demonstrated that between 44,000 and 98,000 people were dying of medical error in the United States. In 2004, the Baker-Norton study, or the Canadian Adverse Event Study, was published looking at our Canadian context, and they described that between 9 and 24,000 people were dying of adverse events in Canada. So adverse event, something unexpected that happens when a patient's within a healthcare system. Within that study, they also showed that 1 out of 13 patients are the victims of adverse events when they're admitted to an acute care hospital. So if we take sort of each group of two tables and you look, just look at the people around you, just turn your heads, look at the people that are sitting in the next two tables. So each group of 13 of you could be a victim of an adverse event. So that could mean that you get the wrong medication and don't have a consequence from it, or you could get the wrong blood, you could have surgery on the wrong limb, so one patient out of 13. The other statistic that came out of that that's very interesting is that 37% of the adverse events were preventable. So we had some mechanism in place within our system to make sure that those adverse events did not happen, and yet they were still happening. So those are the numbers from the Canadian context that we are all dealing with as healthcare providers. The last study that came out in 2006 from the Joint Commission, which is the accreditation body in the United States, they looked specifically at communication. So they looked at sentinel events or very significant adverse events that happened with patients. And they discovered that in 60% of those cases, communication was the main contributing factor in that adverse event and that bad outcome happening to that patient. So between the stories, some of the statistics, we have some clout, some ways to be able to mobilize people to be able to think that this is becoming a problem. We have some data to support that. So within that context and that knowledge, what are some systems that we can use that are already available that we can try to use to promote some of these changes and to make these changes a reality? So the first system came from the Royal College of Physicians and Surgeons of Canada, and it's called the CanMeds Frameworks. CanMeds Framework describes a series of roles that medical trainees need to be able to demonstrate at the end of their training. And you can see one of the key roles is to be a communicator. And within that framework, there's specific competencies that are described in a lot more detail. for that person to be able to ensure that they can demonstrate those things. Building on that, the Canadian Patient Safety Institute in 2008 took the CanMeds framework and worked with the Royal College to develop the safety competencies framework, which is designed to be more of an interprofessional nature, to be used by a variety of people, and it's also patterned after the CanMeds, but has similar domains or similar blocks. And one of the blocks you can see highlighted in blue is to communicate effectively for patient safety. In addition to the first one, which is really how do we change the culture? How do we engage people to understand that we need to start making some changes? And teamwork, of course. And then more recently, towards the end of this year, early spring of next year, the Canadian Medical Protective Association is launching something that's called the Good Practices Guide. And what's really interesting about this, I'm very excited about this, you can tell, is that it's an interactive model. It's going to be available online. It's patterned to be used by interprofessional teams. There are cases that are being included in it that are closed CMPA files. So they're actual, real cases that have happened. And there's a student and a faculty section. So the faculty section will help with professional development for staff to be able to figure out how to use it. The student section will have some quizzes, some ability for the students to be able to print out certificates of participation. So it will be an interesting tool for, I think, academics to be able to see how we can integrate it into our curricula as a complementary tool to what we're currently using. It's self-directed learning. And it's also of interest, I think, to people that work in the healthcare environment to be able to see how we might be able to take advantage of this for professional development of our staff as well. So we have some frameworks and some systems. So lastly, strategies. What are some strategies with respect to communication that we can actually try to see if they will make some changes? So the first is to use a couple of communication models. So one is the SBAR model. I'm going to ask this question, but I'm sure that the same amount of people are going to raise their hands. Who knows what the SBAR model is? Raise your hands. Excellent. Next slide. So the SBAR model, very quickly, is a situational briefing model. It was developed by the military, stolen by aviation, re-stolen by healthcare, because it's much easier for us to do that and get going as opposed to starting from the beginning. But essentially, is that me? Stepping on something. Am I supposed to get off the stage? Is it over? Is that what that means? That is like the hook, like get off the stage, you're finished. So the SBAR model is a situational briefing model. So what is interesting about the model is that it helps people to be able to frame the conversation by including the information that they feel is most relevant to why they may want to call someone for help. So what is it that I see with this patient that's concerning me so much that I need to pick up the phone and call a colleague, call a physician to get some additional information? So the idea of the situation background assessment recommendation is that the situation piece should be between 10 to 15 seconds, and it should have some concrete information there. So what we've seen in the past before we started to implement this may be that there's a physician who's not on the floor, there's a nurse on the floor, the nurse is concerned about the patient, the nurse picks up the phone, calls the physician, introduces herself or himself, introduces who the patient is they're speaking about, and then may get into a significant amount of detail with respect to it's been very complicated, the patient's been unstable for a few hours, we've tried this, that, the other thing, we're not really sure if it's working, the husband is at the bedside, he's very upset, and we've had to get someone come in to do some counseling. If that takes 15 seconds and the person on the other end of the phone is on a portable phone within a hospital setting, on a cellular phone outside the hospital, and then all of a sudden the communication is interrupted for some reason. They walk into a dead zone in the hospital, they lose their cell phone coverage, they're with a provider that drops the calls occasionally. What happens? What does that physician know about that patient? They don't know really what's going on. If we change that and use the SBAR model and think about the first 10 to 15 seconds, and the nurse introduces him or herself, introduces the patient, explains that right now the patient's blood pressure is 80 over 50, their pulse is 145, it was about 110 over 70, and the pulse was 65 about half an hour ago. Now the communication stops. What does the physician know about the patient? They have some idea of hemodynamically how that patient's doing. So we want to move that information up to the top. And that's how the SBAR model can help us. Then we get into the background, what else has been going on, what have we been trying to do, what do we think the problem is. The model gives the employee an opportunity or the team member a chance to be able to suggest what they think the issue is, and to make some type of a recommendation, which could be a clinical one, or it could be, I think you need to come and see this patient immediately. That could be the recommendation. So that's the advantage of the SBAR model, which we're teaching at McGill to the medical students and all the nursing students. The medical students hear about SBAR in their second year, and the feedback that I've been getting from them is that they're really encouraged because it helps them formulate their thoughts in an environment that's sort of new to them when they're coming into the healthcare setting. That's just an example of what the SBAR sheet can look like, and it's adaptable. So you choose the different pieces of information that you think is relevant for that particular patient at that particular time. The second model is a graded assertions model. So the graded assertions model helps us deal within the hierarchy of healthcare by increasing the level of urgency by using different language each time we're saying something to the person that we're speaking to. So an example of what that hierarchy can look like outside of healthcare is the following video. Can we play the video, please? Nope.
Das hier ist mein Sektor.
Das hier ist das wichtigste Gerät des Küstenwächters.
Das Gerät und das Gerät.
Überlebensradar.
Mayday, Mayday. Hello, can you hear us? Can you hear us? Can you... Okay, over. We are sinking. We are sinking.
Hello? This is the German Coast Guard.
We are sinking. We're sinking.
What are you thinking about?
I love that video. That video does a couple of things. One, to me, it sort of demonstrates the idea of what that hierarchy within healthcare can look like. We've got the young junior employee sitting at 100 dials, the older, more experienced person, facial hair, cup of coffee in his hand, slap on the back, you're good to go. With the junior employee really feeling a little bit intimidated to speak up and say, what happens if? What do I do in this situation? That video is actually a TV advertisement for a Berlitz language course which I was taking with one of my associate director of nursing colleagues, Lucia Fabian, a couple of years ago, and Lucia saw that video and thought immediately that Mark will be able to integrate this into a talk somewhere. So if anyone has ever seen me give any talk on communication, you've already seen that video because I use it quite a lot. But to come back to how that hierarchy can impact healthcare. So using the graded assertions model gives us the opportunity to start with a neutral statement, which is level one. Moving up to level two if we still don't get the response we feel is appropriate for the situation. So coming up with a question, a possible solution. Level three, we're thinking more about a direct question to a specific person that's going to require them to answer that question and including some implied consequences. So what is going to happen if we don't take some action at this point? And level four is a direct order or action. So clearly where you start in the model depends on the acuity of the situation. So when I teach this, I make it very clear to the people that I'm teaching it to that if you walk into the patient's room and you go, hi, Mrs. Jones, how are you? And Mrs. Jones is moribund like this. She's completely unresponsive. She's not asking you a question. She's not moving. You don't start at level one and go out into the corridor and say, Helen, can you come look at this patient? I don't think she looks very good. You start at level four, which is your direct order of action of calling a code, getting the team there immediately. So depending on the acuity of the situation, you're going to start at a different level. I'll do a quick example maybe outside of healthcare. Let's say that you are a brand new employee. You've just started your career. You've just started working in your organization. And the CEO of your organization has invited you to come to a meeting with them. So you're brand new in the organization. The CEO is the CEO. There's a few layers of hierarchy between those two people. It's winter. It's a bad storm. The CEO is driving madly to get to this meeting on time. And you're a junior employee sitting in the passenger seat, terrified because driving conditions are terrible. It's white everywhere. You can't see anything in front of you. And so your neutral statement at that point, because you're dealing within that hierarchy, might be, gee, the road conditions are really bad today, aren't they? And they might say, yeah, the road conditions are bad, but I'm a really good driver. I'm very experienced. I'm fine. And they keep going. So then they might go to level two, and the employee might say, did you see that car go into the ditch? It went right into the ditch, right in front of us, right in front of us. Did you see it? And the person might say, yeah, I saw it, but you know, now they're out of our way, and we can keep going. Let's keep going. So then you might go to level three and say, I think you need to slow down the car, because if we don't slow down the car, we're going to be in the ditch right behind that other car. No, we're fine. I'm going safely. We're okay. So then at level 4, tell me what you would say. Slow down the car. Very good. Slow down the car. Stop the car. Roll down a window. I'd rather die of hypothermia on the side of the road. I don't want to be a trauma victim. So that's an example. Try to translate that example into your healthcare milieu. So you notice vital signs are different. You mention them. You notice maybe we unite to take this intervention to reestablish the vital signs or whatever that particular clinical symptom is that you're observing. So think about the neutral statement and move up the levels. The one thing about communication that I find sometimes is that we tend to stay at that neutral statement more or longer than we need to. And we get a little frustrated speaking to the person that we're speaking to. Just quick show of hands. Who's ever been talking to someone and trying to explain something to them and they're just not getting it? And you hear yourself saying, "You're not getting it." Raise your hands. And then you just want to go, "Listen to me! Listen to me!" Right? So you kind of want to choke it out of them. So if you find yourself in that situation, what I'd like you to do is to take 5 seconds, stop talking, think about the last 2 sentences that you said. And if the last 2 sentences to you sounded like neutral statements, you're not moving up to the next level. So think about what it was. If there are 2 neutral statements, then you need to think about including a possible solution and a question. You need to think about being more direct, implied consequences if you don't do something. And you need to think about being very clear about what it is you want them to do. So the next time you're in that situation, just take that 5 seconds, quick reflection, see if you're using that model the way that you could be using it to improve that communication. So this is just an example of how you might be able to change the way that you're speaking at each of those levels. So the first level is impersonal, second level against suggestions, third level implied consequences, we will be in the ditch if we don't slow down, and the last level is that direct order or action. And the direct order or action could be that you're going to consult with a colleague. It could be a junior nurse saying, "I'm not really comfortable with this situation. I'm going to speak to my nurse manager or the nurse in charge or the nurse resource manager." If it's a pharmacy issue, the direct order or action may be, "Well, I'm going to consult with our pharmacist because I think our heparin protocol says we're supposed to do it this way." So you can engage other members of your team as well at that direct order or action as well. So quick summary, communication definition that we spoke about a little earlier, it's an exchange of information. Some stories that you have in your mind, also the story of Josie King, 18 months old when she passed away from that narcotics. Elaine Bromley, difficulty with intubation, her husband having to make that difficult decision when she was 37 years old. Some statistics, so the Baker-Norton study specifically for our Canadian context, 1 in 13 patients, victims of adverse events, 37% are preventable. And the Joint Commission showing that 60% of the time contributing factor was that difficulty with communication. Some systems, so the CanMeds framework for our medical trainees, using the CPSI's safety framework, which is more an interprofessional, and being on the lookout when it is launched, end of this year, early next year, the CMPA's good practices guide to try to see how we might be able to teach ourselves and help to teach the people around us. And then lastly, the 2 examples of how we can use strategies, so the SBAR model and the graded assertions model. So thank you this morning. Enjoy the rest of the day. We've got a full day for you. All the best.
So I'd like to thank Mark for a great introduction to the day. If you have any questions for him, Mark will be part of a panel right after we have breakfast. So I encourage you strongly to hold on to your questions, and he'll be so happy to answer them. So we encourage you to enjoy your breakfast, and as Mark suggested, I will be direct and give you an order. Resume and be back here for 9:35. So, bon appétit.